Hey guys, Barry here. I just wanted to let you know that for some reason while I was recording this interview, which is really awesome by the way, and you're gonna love it, there was this strange clicking noise that started happening halfway through it, but I was able to minimize it as much as possible, and so you'll still be able to enjoy the interview to its fullest. Just wanted to give you the heads up.
Welcome to Sweet Kicks with Brits, the show which helps you decide if a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on, or a try before you buy. Now here's your host, Barry Ricks.
Hey guys, welcome to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. I am your host, Barry Ricks, and today's Kickstarter highlight is Junking, and I have one of the masterminds behind the game. I have David with me here today. How's it going,
awesome,
David?
Man.
Good. Why don't you tell the people about yourself and what you're doing for the game?
So, I'm the game designer, and really simply, basically, I put everything together and pitched it to our artist, Justin Hillgrove. And after some great salesmanship, I convinced him to make the art for the game, and here we are. I'm also obviously running the campaign and also making sure that all of our shipping and everything else is set up as well. So I'm kind of the program manager for the project manager for the whole campaign as well.
That's right. So you reached out to people and said, "Join me on my journey."
Yeah, on this magical journey that we're on. Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's right. Well, that's awesome. Well, tell us a little bit about Junking and what it's all about, and how the feel and the play of the game.
Right. So yeah, first, let me tell you a little bit about the theme. Basically, Justin Hillgrove has this whole world that he's kind of created where he makes artwork in it, and the world is called Implants. And inside the Implants is different areas. There's a huge forest area and a little plains area, and you know, in much the same way that you'd see worlds like Magic the Gathering or even World of Warcraft created. And then he's got this other area which is called the Junklands. And the Junklands is this huge area where all the lost items in our world go, and garbage that we kind of, you know, throw away and whatnot. And so there's just junk for miles and miles and miles. And so the scavenger imps, which are what the players will be taking, on the role of a scavenger imp in the game, the scavenger imps are kind of like, sentient raccoons, and they run around in there, and they find little shiny items, and they get really excited, and they speak in broken English to each other, and they will wear whatever they find. Whatever they find, and they'll bring it back and show off to each other and try to raise their social standing and basically say that they're the boss of somebody else because I found this and it makes me awesome. So in the gameplay, you'll take on the role of one of these scavenger imps, and then each individual card in the deck, which is called the junk pile, everybody draws from the same junk pile, is actually an individual junk item that you can use in the game to kind of either, give yourself more points in the game, which are total up at the end of the game, or you can use them to either draw more cards off the deck or manipulate the game in some way.
Sweet. Well, it kind of reminded me of like the Grinch from How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Yeah.
How everyone was just giving them his junk, and that's how we lived. We're living off of their junk.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we actually made sure to put in the game, there's lots of little little references to funny things that you kind of lose. So one of the things we made sure to put in there right away was we've got a pair of keys in there, and we've got a reference to the old E.T. game that was thrown out by the Atari back in the day. And so
what about the missing socks?
The missing socks, we actually didn't put the missing socks in, but we wanted to put them in as we were thinking about putting them in as an event.
Okay.
We're gonna have like an avalanche of socks that was just running over you. But yeah. So, and then also in the Junklands and the whole world in Implants, there's like a big robot war going on. And so, like a third of the junk that's in the Junklands is actually just robot parts. So you're going to find in the game, there's a lot of little junk pieces that are just, robot arms, robot legs, and robot heads. And then what the scavenger imps do is they actually take the robot heads because they're sized kind of perfectly for the scavenger imps. They actually put them on their head and wear them as hats.
Yeah. Nice. So it plays 2 to 4 players, and how long does a normal game usually take?
Yeah, so it takes normally around probably I'd say 10 to 15 minutes in a normal game. I've been demoing the game with a lot of people recently, and if you play one round, just a single round of the game, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to play. But you know, and obviously when you're teaching somebody on that first game, it might take 20 minutes. But the game is basically designed in a way to make it so that you can play multiple rounds if you want. So at the end of the game, there'll be a total, you know, point total value. So if you and I and a couple dudes were playing, then it would be, you know, I would have maybe 14 points and you'd have 20 or and whatnot. And then each other player, let's say they have like 8 each, then they would carry those points over to the next game. And so, so then you would play, you know, you would say, oh, well, there's 4 players, let's play 4 rounds. Or you'd say, like you would do in Hearts, where you say, oh, you know, first person with 50 points or 100 points or whatever. So the game is basically designed in a way, and there is different variants, so that you can play it kind of at any, you know, as much as you want. You know, whenever I play rounds of Dominion, you know, nobody in my group, we don't play 1 round of Dominion. We play like 5 or 6 rounds. And, you know, my wife and her friend, and then me and a buddy, we'll play, you know, for 6 hours. So, Now, so we kind of designed the game with that thought in mind. Like, we want it to be a kind of filler game that you would play. Maybe, you know, if you're in a large gaming group and, you know, some people aren't there yet, then hey, let's just play around a junkie really quick. Or, you know, just make it the full couple hours if you want to do some, you know, 100-point game or something like that.
Nice.
Well, that sounds awesome. So, as of today when we're recording this, you still have 8 days left to go on the Kickstarter. Yeah. You're scheduled to end, so on May 8th, that will be the last day of the Kickstarter. But you guys are successfully funded and have even reached some of your stretch goals, so congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. We actually funded in about a week. And, you know, obviously there's always this middle area where...
you plateau for a little while, exactly. get a little bit more excitement towards the end, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, we filled it with some pretty cool stuff for some of the backers that were early. You know, we didn't do an early bird, and I'm kind of against early birds in general, but what we did was we made contests that were for backers only. So basically by being a backer, we made a little contest where people could call out the flavor text that they wanted to put onto a card, and then when we chose one that we thought was particularly funny, we actually print out the card in a little like 5x8 print, and then we send it to them. So I thought that was kind of a neat way that maybe we could, you know, fill that little middle gap. And we actually had a lot of you know, really good, pretty funny flavor text that we were able to add in, and then you know, a good number of comments on each one of the updates. Probably around maybe 30 to 50 entries per flavor text contest. And we're still doing those. We'll probably continue doing them until we get to a spot where we're actually finally sending out the files to the company. We'll probably do 1 or 2, maybe even after the campaign, because there's a little bit of time there. We can sneak a couple in, I think.
That's awesome. So when do you hope to have the game out to the backers and to the public?
Well, you know, we've got it actually. We're, you know, one of the really fortunate things that is awesome about the internet is that you're essentially able to find out anything you want and get resources to you quickly. And so we were able to reach out to some companies that are already tried and true companies that, you know, that can get this done for us. Which, I mean, you know, Kickstarter and this whole streamlined system is just kind of really amazing. You know, it's something that's not really even possible maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but now it's, you know, anybody can do it essentially. So we're thinking that we're going to be able to get them out to everybody by October, but that's actually, we've put that date as the date that, you know, if things, you know, what do you call it? We put a little buffer in there, right? So October is, if a couple things go wrong, we'll probably get it to everybody October. If everything goes right, maybe before then. But if things go really wrong, you know, who knows? But, you know, who knows what's going to happen? But,
you just never know. You could run into random printing problems. Those things
happen.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Really,
and people, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people remember that, you know, this year, the West Coast in America, you know, faced it.
There was a strike or something, and that held up all the freights coming in and everything.
Yep. And I'm a big Chaos backer as well on certain games, and so you know, that affected me as well. And you know, you just kind of have to sit with it. So yeah, I mean, we're thinking the average of that is probably going to be around October. So that's what we're aiming for.
So this is your first Kickstarter that you've done yourself, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I backed a bunch, and I've seen enough about what's going on, and I kind of know what, you know, what kind of backer, what you expect.
Get a good idea.
Yeah, totally.
So, with you being your first Kickstarter, is there maybe a good tip or trick that you could tell people that are thinking about starting their Kickstarter, what you would recommend them
doing?
Yeah,
I mean, for me, I think the big thing is just don't rush it. I mean, I think the biggest mistake that I've made is I didn't really shore up my social media and, like, advertising stuff before the Kickstarter started. You know, I've seen a number of companies, that will, you know, they'll have a Facebook page, even on their first time they've created a game. They'll have a Facebook page all set up. They'll get people to join their page and like their page and whatnot. And then they'll start dropping advertisements and saying, hey, here's some pictures of us working behind the scenes. And you know, and kind of creating that community even before their Kickstarter launches. We didn't do that, but we were able to get, you know, we had a pledged goal of $12,000. We were able to get, I think, almost $6,000 or $7,000 in the first day. But that's mainly because, you know, I linked up with an artist, Justin Hillgrove, that has a huge following already. And so essentially, he just basically said, "Hey guys, you know, we're launching this in a week. Kind of
buy this game for art."
And so, yeah, I kind of got away with what we did. You know, I kind of got lucky. But I definitely would think that if you didn't have that kind of following already, that you kind of need to make sure to generate that following before you really start.
So do a little bit of networking before you launch everything.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that too. You know, I interview a lot of people doing Kickstarters and everything, and you can tell the difference of those that are more established and have, you know, a lot of networking contacts than those that are just like a one-man team that decided to do something. And sometimes those games are successful, sometimes they're not. But you see the bigger groups of people that, you know, have done things before. Or have people they can reach out to. It definitely has that. I would recommend people doing that too. Start creating a gaming network. Then when you're saying, "Hey, I have this game coming out, check it out," then people will be more willing.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me. I have a couple buddies. I used to run when I was 18 years old. I opened up my own little brick and mortar game store in my local town, and I ran it for 8 years.
Nice.
And that's part of the reason why I know as much as I do about gaming and game balance and whatnot. And I have friends now, you know, it's been 12-ish years since I closed the store down, that say, "Hey, you should open a store again. You know, what would it take to open up another store?" And they think maybe they'll do it. And I say, "Well, if you'd like to open a store, when would you like to open it?" And they say, "Oh, I'm thinking maybe this summer." And I go, "Okay, what you need to do is from now until summer, work on a time machine and make it so that you can go back 3 years in time and start working on a website where you are basically creating a nexus of information about gaming. And then write articles every day and talk about all the games that are out and tell them what you think about it and start writing good reviews and getting a good following. Then open your game store." It's the same type of thing.
No, it's totally true because, you know, just build up something first, then create something physical, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, so, the resources for you to do that is they're there. They exist. There's really no reason to not, you know, basically create.
Well, you could do that for free, essentially, you know, and just, you know, blogging about games and stuff like that.
You know, people start to trust you and start to realize who you are, and so then when you put your hat in the ring for, "Hey, I'm going to make this physical game," then they know what kind of game they can expect because they've been listening to your, you know, they've been reading your writings for a while. So,
Yeah. So I had a question. You mentioned, so this is Junking an Implants game, and you mentioned there's other implants, and this game is focusing on the junk land area. Are you thinking about bringing out other games set in the same world but in the different areas of the
implant? Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that we're going to kind of decide. The artist, you know, Justin, his art is unbelievable, and he's got a really good following, and people, you know, really love his work, and he does a lot of work with his, like, a lot of mashups of, like, pop culture things or usually gamer-related things. Like, he has you know, some of the ones that I know that he sells very well is he's got a couple you know, he's got like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer / Sesame Street mashup, which he just made where Buffy is like hunting after the vampire, the Count from Sesame Street. Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Count.
And it's one of the funniest drawings ever, and people love it. They go crazy. And then he's got a Blues Brothers Star Wars mashups where the C-3PO and R2-D2 are drawn as the Blues Brothers. And stuff like that he does, but he's also been, you know, I'd say the last 3 or 5 years, he's been making, you know, these strides inside the implants and kind of really starting to fill this world out. So, you know, when I pitched to him, "Hey, I think I would like to make this card game. You know, let's just make this little game that will only cost, you know, maybe $25 or $30, and then we'll get it out there. We'll put an honest, you know, post up on the Kickstarter and just basically do the work, prove to people that we can get it done, and then we can kind of figure out what we want to do. And what I would like to do is like fill out the implants world. Now, I'm not going to say that we're going to try to be as big as Warhammer 40K, but if you can imagine, the Warhammer universe was nothing 30 years ago, right?
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, there's a thought process towards, hey, if I tell you today, hey, start writing. And start iterating in your world, 30 years from now, it'll be worth, you know, a lot. You know, there's something to be said there. So I don't know what we're going to do with the implants or whether or not we're going to make more games inside the implants. I would like to, and I think that Justin would as well. And his art is just so strong that, and he's able to do it so quickly that, that it's definitely a possibility for us. But a lot of the games that we've come up with as other games we want to make as a second or third game, and, you know, because obviously with this one being successful, they want to talk about what's next. You know, the ideas that we have are kind of, they don't really necessarily sit inside the implants, but this game that Junking was actually a game that when I first brought it to him, it was actually a game where you were mining. Like, not mining, you were prospecting. For gold back in back in California, the gold rush, and then the objective of the game was to find the biggest piece of gold, and so there were little gold pieces in the deck, and then one of them was like the monster piece that would, once you drew it, that the game would end, and so we basically after I heard his pitch about implants, I thought, oh, I can definitely modify this a little bit, change the gameplay up a little bit, and in a good way to actually add some different various card abilities and things like that to kind of facilitate the implants world. So I think that there's definitely a possibility that we could make more inside the world, but right now again, we're just trying to get this one out, right, and then we can figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. let's start with this one first, and then go from there. So David, thank you so much for being on the show today. I mean, you have 1 week left at the Kickstarter, so I imagine you're a pretty busy guy. So why don't you tell a little bit of people about where they can find more about you or Justin or Junking in general?
Yeah, so, obviously we've got the Kickstarter page. It's just Junking, which is just like, J-U-N-K-I-N-G. And then we also we have on our Facebook page, which is just Junk Spirit Games, with spaces in between. We actually kind of formed that company in the middle of this Kickstarter, and are putting into that. And then obviously you can check out Justin's art on impsandmonsters.com, all one word, no dashes or periods, and you can see all of his artwork there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, David, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time, and good luck with everything in the future with the implants and anything else that you decide to bring into the
awesome,
gaming
man.
World. And thanks to Dan Patrice from the Geek All-Stars for our intro and outro, and you can find him at thegeekallstars.com. And remember to back your projects wisely.
Thanks for listening to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. If you'd like to mail the show, send any questions, comments, or interview requests to sweetkickswithbricks@gmail.com. Sweet Kicks with Bricks is a Closet Geek Studios production. For more information on the Closet Geek, please head to closetgeek.net.